Hello and welcome to Millennials Making Mistakes. I'm Caitlin, your host, and I will be talking about mistakes that millennials, including me, are making and how to work through them. This is episode one. Hello again. I thought for a long time about what I wanted to talk about in our very first episode together. I think that I should start right at the beginning, which is about the largest mistake I have made recently and the reason that I started this podcast, which is quitting a job. Hello again. I thought for a long time about what I wanted to talk about in our very first episode together. And I think that the logical start here is why I am starting this podcast. To get us started, I want to talk about the biggest mistake I have made recently, which is sticking with a job that is not working out for way too long. So this is all about how I knew it was time to quit my job. The story of how I came to start this podcast is not a super complicated one. I quit a job that I really wanted to love. This really should have been my dream job on paper. It was doing the kind of work that I love and am very qualified to do. It was working in a small office in an excellent location, in a vibrant, diverse community. And I applied for this job thinking that this would be really it for me and that I would be at this job for a long time. And it was going to be just amazing in so many ways. I was there for 3 months. I consider it to be a mistake that I was there for that long. I know that 3 months is nothing, especially in the professional world, and I don't want to downplay that, but 3 months was definitely way too long for me to be at this job. I consider this to be a big mistake, and I don't want anyone else to make a similar one, so I am here working through my mistakes with you today. I started my job on January 5th, and I think that the writing was on the wall almost immediately. And at that point, I really should have decided to leave the job. It was on the first day, if not the second or third, that I would say things really started to become apparent that they weren't going to work out. But I stuck with it thinking that maybe they would improve. But it was at this very early stage that I got what I consider to be the first red flag in a series of red flags. So red flag number one is the job you were hired to do is not the job that you are doing. Do you remember when you applied for that job way back in the beginning and they showed you the job description? Do you still have that? Because if you don't, you really should, because it becomes very important to this story. I did happen to keep a copy of my job description just offhand. I really didn't mean to. It was pretty much an accident. I'm not very good at keeping track of paperwork, which is something that I think will become apparent throughout this podcast. But the job description was what originally drew me to this job. I was hired to do something very specific for which I was very qualified. I work in fundraising, and there is a particular computer program that is the gold standard within our industry. It's called Razor's Edge, if you're familiar with fundraising at all. It's called a constituent management software because you use it to track your donors. It's very important to have. So in most fundraising offices, they need someone who is an expert in maintaining the database of these different donors. And that happened to be me. I was lucky enough early in my professional experience to get a lot of experience on this program and to get some professional certifications. This has made me pretty high demand in my field, which is something that happened by total chance and something I'm very grateful for. Throughout my entire application process for this job, my manager really emphasized that the use of this program was my primary duty in this job. It was going to make up the bulk of my time, and that was the reason that she was interested in me above anyone else, was because I had so much experience in this program. I was so excited about this because working in Razor's Edge is actually something that I really love, and it's something that I'm really good at. The emphasis on using this program was what drew me to this job, and if it had not been part of the job description, I wouldn't have taken the job. I was super excited to start work, and I started working very quickly because I was so ecstatic about this, and the days started to go by, and it became apparent that this was really only going to be about 5% of my work week, just in terms of my hours worked. So the job description had originally said this would be about 65% of my time, and in reality, it was more like 5%. At first, I decided that this was because I was just getting started, and that as I picked up steam and was able to work more and more independently, that this was something that would change. When I had meetings with the management, I would bring this up, and it was never really addressed. It was sort of blown off, and no one wanted to talk about how my job description was not lining up with the job I was doing. This happened several more times where and more it became apparent that, no, this is pretty normal, that your job description and your job just aren't going to match up anymore. Sorry, Caitlin. I began to take on more and more tasks that were not part of my job description at all, and that really didn't sit well with me. So if this is something that's happening to you in your workplace, there's really two ways to think about this. Maybe this is awesome. Like, the new things you're taking on that were not part of your job description are great. They're things that you want to do more than your job description, and they're things that you love and things you didn't know you love, and you're learning lots of new stuff, and this is great. If that's the case, awesome. Like, you have really hit the jackpot and things are good and you shouldn't turn away from that. This was just not the case for me. I had signed up to do this particular job, and this was not what I was expected to be doing. So I think if you're in this position of thinking about leaving a job, you need to think about not only are the duties what you thought you would be doing, what you were told you would be doing, and how do you feel about that? If you feel good about your job still and you're like, I don't mind this, then no worries, keep on going. But if you're good at your job, if the work is quality, but you hate doing it, that's not a great sign. This combination of not doing the work I thought I would be doing and not enjoying the work either really ruined this job for me. So the second red flag I came across after my job description just ended up not applying was I stopped caring about the outcomes of the work I was doing, and my day-to-day job felt really meaningless in the long term. So think really hard about what is the long-term outcome of what you're doing every day. And this applies even if you are self-employed, if you work for a big company, if you work for a small company. What are you doing every day, and how does that contribute to the long-term goals of the company? Do you feel really attached to this? Do you feel like you appreciate and promote the mission of your company or your own business? Are you really connecting with the company message? Do you feel that your efforts every day are worth it? For me, this was definitely a solid yes. I believed in the work that I was doing, and I loved our overall mission. I thought that we were really doing the best work possible, and that this was the most amazing workplace. And on all of my onboarding stuff, when they would talk about this is the mission of the company, I just found myself thinking, yes, 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 this is the place I want to work, and these are the missions that I want to support. I believed in the work I was doing, I love the mission, and I became very quickly jaded. This feeling was just entirely warped out of me very quickly. I found that I was no longer invested in the overall mission of the business. I felt that the work I was doing every day did not encourage that mission. I didn't feel an attachment to our long-term goals. And it just wasn't working for me anymore. This also goes if you feel that your boss or your coworkers or your workplace in general are doing something you consider to be kind of wrong or unethical. There was a little bit of that happening in my workplace as well, where some of the practices that were happening were things I just did not agree with very strongly. That's something that I can probably save for a later episode, but it is definitely a major factor in feeling really jaded about your job, is if you no longer have faith that the management or your coworkers are doing what's right for, you know, the business as a whole as well. In my mind, we only have so much time on this earth, and I'm going to be working for a great deal of that time. It's not worth it to be at a job where you're not invested in what you're doing. For me, this also began to directly impact the quality of my work. I'm the kind of person who really feels that my work needs to be quality. I need to care about what I'm doing, and it needs to be of the highest quality possible, no matter what I'm doing, whether that's, you know, a data entry position or it's making phone calls. Like, quality of your work needs to be very high. As I became more and more jaded by my job, I could feel that the quality of my work was slipping the less invested I was. When you're gearing up to quit your job, this is in particular a really bad thing. As you're quitting, you want to leave in as high standing as possible. And this is something that, again, I have another episode planned out talking about, like, your last 2 weeks and what to do. But in that time, it's very important that you don't allow your work to decrease in quality. And this was really hard for me as I began to struggle with not caring and kind of apathy towards my job. The apathy towards my job also began to tie into the third red flag, which was that I felt immense pressure to work constantly at the risk of sacrificing my personal life. I am willing to be very naive about how I didn't know how much my job was worth. I moved to the Twin Cities area from a much smaller city, and the job market is just very different here, and sometimes it's hard to know how to value your time and your services. And this is also true if you are a self-employed person or if you're just getting started out in the professional world. Sometimes it's really hard to know how much you're worth. And I was offered a salary when I applied for this job that was about $15,000 a year more than I had ever made at any of my other professional jobs. And I thought that was so reasonable. I jumped at the chance because that was more money than I had ever made, and it felt awesome at the time. But as I became more and more jaded and I was talking to other people in the same industry about my feelings, it turned out that my intuition was completely wrong and I was being paid well below median salary for this job. Around the same time, the hours also became more and more demanding. Inside the office, we were put under pressure to work really constantly. I'm talking about getting criticized for taking a lunch break longer than 20 minutes, even though I was working a minimum of 10 hours a day. Being expected to come into work early and stay late, sometimes several hours, without compensation, of course. This was a salaried position, and so the number of hours I worked a day really didn't have any bearing on how much I was paid. In combination with some of the other factors going on at this workplace, the pay compared to the number of work hours was just not going to work with me long term. I felt that personally, my time was not being valued. When you get to this point where you feel that your place of employment is not valuing your time, that is also a sign that it's time to look for other work. I felt like I really was losing any kind of work-life balance that I had, and my personal life was suffering as a result. At the time, I had a 30 to 45 commute. At the time, I had a 30 to 45 minute commute each way. And this was because the long hours I was working actually stuck me right in the middle of rush hour. And so my commute was about twice as long as it needed to be. And so that meant that a lot of the time, I only had 2 or 3 hours of like good wakeful time at home in the evening before I needed to go to bed so I could go to work the next day. I wasn't able to get anything done at home because of this. You know, the house was a wreck. I wasn't spending enough time with my dog. We were becoming like increasingly reliant on like dog daycare. And talking to my coworkers, they felt a very similar pressure. So I know that this wasn't something that was just affecting me personally. This is just not a good situation to be in when you feel like your personal life is slipping away from you at the, you know, due to your work life. You shouldn't have to pick work at the expense of your personal life. And that was another sign that it was time for me to start looking for the exit. Red flag number four is there was little... another thing that's really important to me is personal and professional growth. I really believe that, you know, your place of work should not just be the kind of place you go to make a paycheck. It should be somewhere where you go to learn and grow as a person and also as a professional to better yourself for the future. My fourth red flag is there was no chance for growth, personal, professional, or salary growth at this job. Because it's so important for me to be able to grow personally as well as professionally, this was another thing that really attracted me, was that this job seemed to have a lot of opportunity for both personal and professional growth. Working with a small team, previously I had worked on mostly larger teams, this seemed to be the best place to get a lot of personal growth experience, as well as professional growth experience, because I was taking on a managerial position, I was going to be a little bit higher up and able to make more high-level decisions, which was something I was excited about. This just turned out to be not true. At my place of work, there was not really a chance of personal or professional growth. Similarly to the job description, I felt like this was something that was misled for me. There were supposed to be opportunities for trainings and professional seminars to help grow my skill set, all of which just I was never able to attend, primarily due to cost. When the cost became a problem, I offered to pay out of pocket, and I was told this was not appropriate because I would be losing productive time at work when I had to take time off to attend the Chamber of Commerce meetings or Rotary or things like that. I wasn't able to take even online webinars if it meant I was going to be losing work time. And again, if I only have two or three wakeful hours of time at home, I'm not able to do a lot of personal or professional, you know, activity building at that time. So coupling this with the idea that I was no longer invested in my work, there was really only one thing that could have kept me at this job, and that is the possibility of salary growth. I don't think that it's inappropriate to know how much money you need to make personally to make something worth your while. We all need a certain amount of money to keep the lights on and to make it worth our time to do our jobs. And that's why, you know, all jobs come with a salary range. How much is your time worth? Again, this is a really difficult thing to say. At the time I thought I was making a lot of money, but when it became apparent that I was not really compared to my peers, I thought, well, maybe there's a chance for growth. You start out at a low salary and you kind of move up. This was something that I talked about very candidly with my manager. And if you are in a similar position where you're able to have such a candid discussion, I highly recommend that you do. It was something that really helped put into perspective the job and their priorities to me. It was communicated that it was highly unlikely I would get more than a standard cost of living raise over the next 5 years. So again, this was not communicated at the beginning of my employment. It was something I had to seek out myself, but it was something that became more and more clear as the weeks began to move along, that just the chance of growth I was going to have at this place was very minimal. This ended up making my decision a little bit easier. If you're in a similar position, again, think about what you need. Are you suffering personally or professionally? Do you feel like you have stagnated in this position? Because if that's the case, it's probably a good idea for you to start looking elsewhere. You don't want to feel stagnated at your job in such a way that you're not moving forward in the direction that you see your life going. All right, the fifth red flag was really the one that I found to be the most alarming, and it was that my main personality trait was hating my job. This did become the final straw for me. Work was the only conversation point I had, and some of this was because I was spending all my time there, and so I didn't really have anything else to talk about besides work and what was going wrong. But when it gets to the point where you feel like you have no other interests besides hating your job, that's not good. Work was all I would talk about at home. It was all I would talk about with my friends, with strangers, when I called my parents. On my really long commute, a lot of the time I would call my mom. She was able to take my calls at her job, and I would talk to her on my commute home about how awful my day had been. And this happened, you know, multiple times a week. It became a constant force in my life, was just not being happy. And of course, you can imagine how this affects your mental health as well. If you're just constantly in an environment where you feel more and more negative about your job and what you're doing, that's not going to be healthy mentally either. I would come home and my boyfriend would immediately ask what happened today, because he knew I needed to get it off my chest before we could move on with our lives. You know, in the evening, we couldn't do anything else until after I had gotten my, you know, vitriolic spiel about my terrible day off my chest. He knew that I was going to say something awful, but he also knew that I had to get it out. When it felt like my job became the only thing to talk about, like, I would meet new people and that would be the first thing I say was like, oh, you know, my name is Caitlin, I'm looking for work. It began to deeply impact my mental well-being, as I mentioned. In the morning, I could actually feel nauseous or queasy a lot of the time thinking about going into work, because I knew it was going to be such a mental strain to stay positive for the whole day. Sometimes I would be in a meeting and I would begin to feel nauseous just because I was starting to get angry. Like, it's a weird feeling when you can feel your blood pressure rising, and that was happening to me fairly regularly. It was a real hassle to try to force myself out of bed every day, and I began to feel upset and angry all the time, even when I wasn't at work. I would begin to feel this terrible rage about my job just anytime anything reminded me of my job. If it was on the weekend, if it was on a long weekend, it didn't matter. I would just feel terrible. If you're in the position where you feel like all you ever talk about is how awful your job is, or, you know, if we're talking a little bit more broadly, if all you're talking about is how, like, awful your relationship is, like, get out of it. It's not a good, healthy space for you. And something that I had a really hard time coming to terms with was no job, no amount of money is worth sacrificing your physical and mental health over. And that was a realization that I really had to come to on my own time, but it's 100% true. You cannot sacrifice your mental and physical health for your job. Speaking of physical health, something that I haven't really talked about with anyone is that physically, I react to stress by eating quite a lot, and so I began to actually put on weight as a result of just the stress of this job. So again, like, your physical health should not be suffering because of your work at all, and that's something that I'm still working on as, like, I'm coming down off of this stress. Is like, oh, I feel like I don't need to eat as much anymore, and I feel like I'm much more healthy. And again, not having any time to myself at home, like, I definitely was not exercising. I wasn't getting good physical activity. It wasn't good. So I quit. It was a Tuesday. I walked into my boss's office first thing that morning, and I set a resignation letter on her desk. She asked if there was any possibility of discussing it, and I said no. I felt like my concerns had already been heard and there had been no action, and it was time for me to carry on. I don't want to make it seem like these five things were the only things that went into this decision. I'm sure that you can understand how complicated a big decision like this can be. Any big decision in your life, there's going to be a lot that goes into it. And this was something that I really agonized over for weeks and weeks. I was on the job market for a very long time looking for other work. I talked about this with coworkers, friends, families, professional contacts. And I hope that these are all things that kind of over the course of, you know, this podcast that I'll be able to share with you. Something that I want you to be able to take away from this podcast is I felt like I almost needed permission to be able to quit my job. I needed so much support from my friends and family to help me get to this place. So if any of this stuff is sounding really familiar, I understand if sometimes you feel like you need permission. On all those phone calls to my mom on my commute home, a lot of times I would just ask her, like, is it okay for me to do this? And she would always say, you have to do what's right for you, which is totally true. If your job is really draining on you, I'm not going to tell you to quit, but I am going to tell you to start thinking about your exit plan. Is this job somewhere you want to be for a very long time? And if it's not, start making that plan. And maybe in your situation, making your exit plan means I'm going to be at this job for another year. Maybe it's I'm going to be at this job another 5 years. But if you see the end of your growth, it's okay to start making that plan. We all have different circumstances. I was very lucky in that between me and my partner, we don't have huge financial obligations. We don't have children, things like that, that definitely complicate the decisions that go. Between me and my partner, we don't have a lot of financial responsibilities that make these decisions more complicated. There are things in your life that make decisions more or less complex. You know, if you have children, if you have a lot of debt, if you have health problems. And we're very fortunate that we were able to make these decisions fairly easily. If you're not in that position, that's totally fine. That's why, you know, don't necessarily like show up on Tuesday and quit your job, but think really hard about what is the plan? What is the exit plan here? And if you need that little bit of encouragement, here it is. It's okay to start planning to leave your job, especially if you don't like it. You don't have to stay at a job you hate. I think it's also important to know that sometimes your exit plan is talking to the management or your HR department about, these are the things about my job that are really weighing me down and being an issue, and things that I need to be fixed for me to stay at this job, and just seeing what comes of that conversation. If you're lucky enough to be in an open workplace where you can talk to your manager or your HR about that, then do. Take advantage of that. So that's our show for today. I will say that on this first episode, you did not hear any ads. That is something that will be changing in the future, but I did want to take this opportunity to say that the show does have a Patreon page. If you're not familiar with Patreon, it is the internet's tip jar. So if you like what I have been saying, if it has helped you in some way, you can go to our Patreon page, which is patreon.com/mmmpodcast, and sign up to make a monthly contribution. A monthly contribution can be as little as a dollar. You can give me a dollar a month to make this podcast, and you'll be able to see exclusive content and receive rewards for your contributions. If not, there is definitely no hard feelings. This is an entirely voluntary thing. On the other hand, if you're interested in being an advertiser, please contact me. The email address is millennialsmakingmistakes@gmail.com. Go make mistakes, hopefully learn from them, and I'll be back next week with another episode.